Tonight I'm going to talk about self-love. And I think I'll begin by saying to my understanding of the wisdom teachings that each and every human being is completely precious and infinitely lovable. That the universal love just embraces every one of us. And even in our brokenness, even in the places where we struggle, the universal love embraces us. We are lovable throughout our being, each and every one of us. And so, of course, from this perspective, we ought to love ourselves. We ought to love ourselves as much as we love other people. It's funny because self-love or love of self, I think this is getting given, it's gotten a bad rap in the Western religious and philosophical traditions. You know, love of self, sometimes it's conceived as sort of this selfishness, you know, I get all the cookies to myself kind of thing, or someone putting themselves way above others, I'm better than everyone, that kind of thing. And of course, it doesn't feel good to be on the receiving end of either of those, but I don't think self-love is a good name for those, because those qualities, they don't have the energy of love. There's nothing loving there. You know, the person who's being selfish and hogging everything to themselves, they're really acting out of scarcity and fear. And the person who's putting himself above everyone else, that's really, as we talked last week when we talked about toxic shame, that's a shame dynamic, putting myself way above everyone else. Self-love is really when we can accept ourselves fully, when there's tremendous compassion, when we can be at peace with ourselves and rest in ourselves. And if I can be that much at peace with myself, I can be that much at peace with everything around me. I've met some people like this, people that have tremendous self-love. And it just is, there's something extraordinary about being in their presence. Their presence is a gift. And so, why do we struggle with self-love? Why do we resist it? Well, there are many reasons. I want to read a quote here. This is from Kristen Neff, Dr. Kristen Neff, who does a lot of research on self-love. The number one reason people give for why they aren't more self-compassionate is that they're afraid they'll be too soft on themselves, that they'll let themselves get away with anything. They really believe that their internal judge plays a crucial role in keeping them in line and on track. In other words, they confuse self-compassion with self-indulgence. As I've defined it in my academic writing, self-compassion involves three components: being kind and caring toward yourself rather than harshly self-critical, framing imperfections in terms of the shared human experience, and seeing things clearly without ignoring or exaggerating problems. Self-compassion also enhances rather than undermines motivation. So there's a lot going on in that quote. I think I would say, you know, self-love is certainly different from self-indulgence. And maybe one way to think about this is think about a parent of a child. And imagine the child, say, comes home from school with a failing grade on a test, something like that. Now, of course, it would be dysfunctional for the parent to rip into the child, you know, you're the worst, you're a failure, you're so stupid, you know, that sort of thing. That might panic the child into doing some hard work for a little while, but ultimately the child's going to believe all those damaging messages and they'll probably give up, you know. Now, also at the extreme opposite end, it would also be dysfunctional. The parent is saying to the kid, oh, forget about that test. Here, have some candy, have some ice cream, you know, and indulging them, that would also be dysfunctional. You know, and of course, Buddhism is called the middle way because it's about the balance between extremes. And balance is a very hard thing. a healthy response would be the parent who could say, you know, I'm sorry you had this experience, but let's set up a study schedule. We can work together to solve this problem, to make you more competent, to build your skills for next time, you know, that sort of thing. And much in the same way, I think people imagine, you know, if they're at the one stream of tearing into themselves and they imagine that, you know, if they give that up, you know, they're going to lose control, then they're imagining that the other end is completely letting go of all control. Again, self-love is about balance. It's about establishing healthy parameters for my life. You know, what is healthy for me? What brings me deepest joy? And it's not going to be running willy-nilly after everything I want, because it's a bit anti-intuitive, but Buddhism makes very clear, if I run willy-nilly after everything I want, that's not a path that leads to genuine happiness. That's not a path that leads to joy. So I'll many things to say about self-love. One thing I often like to say is that the path of self-love is one that invites us over and over again to love what feels unlovable inside of us, to accept what feels unacceptable, and to forgive what feels unforgivable. And it's a tricky thing, because as we talked last week, and this is why this topic is really following last week's topic. Last week, we talked about toxic shame, and we talked about how this is really an epidemic in many ways in this society. And shame is the feeling that I am unworthy, that I don't deserve any love, I don't deserve recognition, I should be, you know, ignored, shunned, that sort of thing. And so it's important to realize that, first of all, we all struggle with these things, and this is part of what Dr. Kristen Neff was talking about, framing imperfections in terms of the shared human experience. In other words, I'm not the only person in the world wrestling with the messages of toxic shame. It's in fact something that billions of people are wrestling with, you know. So sometimes it helps just to objectify it a little bit. And also, it's very important to realize that in the dynamic of the psyche, what's going on is there's a place of pain that is, as it were, unconscious. It doesn't have ready access to consciousness. And so what is the language of consciousness? Well, it's verbal. So it sends up a verbal message. And that verbal message might be something along the lines of, oh, you're worthless, or something like this. And the mind gets suckered. The mind believes the verbal content of that message. And really, the purpose of that communication is to call attention to the deep feeling, not the verbal content. In many ways, we have to be wise the way that that the parent of, say, a 2 or 3 year old would be wise. You know, when a 2 year old is, say, distressed and tired, they can't articulate what they really need. They have a temper tantrum. You know, and in the temper tantrum, they can say all kinds of things. You know, I hate mommy, I hate daddy, you know, all sorts of things can come out of the mouth of a 2 year old in temper tantrum. The wise parent is more or less discounting the verbal messages coming out of the child's mouth and is attending to the child's real needs. And that's exactly the attitude we need to have toward our own places of brokenness. Discounting the verbal message and attending to the real needs. And often the real needs have to do with love, acceptance, and forgiveness. I think it's also important to recognize that in the work of self-love, any of the places that have been damaged with shame, any of the places that hold deep shame, they've essentially been othered in the psyche. And so we're dealing with we're dealing with a boundary of otherness deep within us. And it's very important to think about how we approach others in the world. You know, a few weeks ago I talked about allowing. The psychologist David Dieta talks about allowing as being an important skill in any healthy adult relationship, that I allow somebody else to be who they are, you know. And much in the same way, we need to allow across our boundaries of inner otherness. We need to allow our own broken places to show up however they're going to show up. They may or may not show up the way that we want them to show up. You know, can we allow them to speak in their own terms and to come forth within us in their own voice? Because as long as we're imposing conditions, well, I'll feel into this place as long as I know that it's going to be like this, you know. As long as we're imposing conditions, well, any place that's already been shamed is probably not going to trust the fact that we're piling on more conditions, you know. So the work of self-love is hard. I think another thing I'll share is that I'm really finding during this time, in a lot of my personal reading, I'm reading a lot about anti-racist work, because these are the live issues. And I'm struck over and over again by how deeply these issues intersect with spiritual work. One message that Dr. Imbram Kendi has is that assimilationist thought, like segregationist thought, both of them are different facets of racism. You know, the segregation saying, I want to be separate from those people, assimilation saying, well, it's fine if those people want to become exactly like us, you know, that sort of thing. And that anti-racist thought is neither segregationist nor assimilationist. And it's fascinating to think of that in terms of how do we relate to inner otherness, you know? I'm not going to reach wholeness if I'm segregating, you know, certainly, you know, I'm just not going to feel that place, you know, that sort of thing. But I'm also not going to reach wholeness if I'm saying, okay, you know, broken place, you can join the me that's already built and set. Any potent human relationship has the ability to change us, you know. Carl Jung said something like the meeting of two personalities is like the mixing of two chemicals. If there's any reaction at all, both are transformed. And so much in the same way, if we're framing these places of wounded within us as inner otherness, then in connecting with them, we're allowing ourselves to be transformed by them. And that that really integration will be a process in which the ego itself grows and may change. And so it's very important to keep all this in mind in the work of self-love. I would say that in this society, a society in which so many people deal with toxic shame, one of the most profound gifts you could give not only to yourself, but to everyone around you, everyone that you even walk past in the supermarket, would be if you can embody the energy of self-love. The more you can work towards self-love, the more you can inhabit self-love and feel it in every cell of the body, the more you are giving a gift to every single person with whom you come in contact. So at this point, I'm going to share the quote sheet. So I put the quote sheet in the chat there. I have at the top the quote by Dr. Kristen Neff, a wonderful one from Rumi. Your task is not to seek for love, but merely to seek and find all the barriers within yourself that you have built against it. Thomas Aquinas says, well-ordered self-love is right and natural. So we're getting a plus one, even from stodgy old Thomas Aquinas. Ralph Waldo Emerson says, "What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us." And just speaking to the depth of strength, the depth of wisdom that we have within us that we access when we can accept ourselves fully. Abraham Lincoln said, "I'm not bound to win, but I'm bound to be true. I'm not bound to succeed, but I am bound to live up to what light I have." And so, you know, framing that difference between how the world pictures success versus what it means to be authentic and whole. George Eliot says quite simply, "It is never too late to be what you might have been." Psychologist William James says, "Act as if what you do makes a difference. It does." E.E. Cummings says, "The hardest challenge is to be yourself in a world where everyone is trying to make you be somebody else." And that is so true. Joseph Campbell says, "The privilege of a lifetime is being who you are." And in a similar vein, Rabbi Abraham Joshua Heschel says, "Just to be is a blessing. Just to live is holy." The poet Charles Bukowski said, "Can you remember who you were before the world told you who you should be?" That one is deep. That one is worth reflecting on. Thich Nhat Hanh says, "To be beautiful means to be yourself. You don't need to be accepted by others. You need to accept yourself." Ram Dass says, "Your problem is you're too busy holding on to your unworthiness." Eartha Kitt tells us, "It's all about falling in love with yourself and sharing that love with someone who appreciates you rather than looking for a love to compensate for a self-love deficit." The Dalai Lama says, "If you don't love yourself, you cannot love others. You will be able to love others. If you have no compassion for yourself, then you will not be able to develop compassion for others." Rita Mae Brown says, "I think the reward for conformity is that everyone likes you except yourself." And that one is really true. Jack Kornfield quite simply says, "If your compassion does not include yourself, it is incomplete." Shakti Gawain says, "My willingness to be intimate with my own deep feeling creates the space for intimacy with another." Marion Williamson says, "All of us wish we had perfect childhoods with a mother and father who modeled ideal parental attitudes and taught us to internalize the tenets of self-love. Many of us, however, did not. But we can do that work of parenting ourselves now," I would add. Bell Hooks says, "If we give our children sound self-love, they will be able to deal with whatever life puts before them." And it's true that the more we do the work of self-love, the more resilient we become and able to handle whatever life puts through us. John O'Donohue says, "When you are compassionate with yourself, you trust in your soul, which you will let guide your life. Your soul knows the geography of your destiny better than you do." Tony Robbins says, "Life is a gift, and it offers us the privilege, opportunity, and responsibility to give something back by becoming more." Christian Chenoweth says, "If you can learn to love yourself and all the flaws, you can love other people so much better, and that makes you so happy." Tina Fey says quite simply, "Do your thing and don't care if they like it." Tyra Banks says, "Self-love has very little to do with how you feel about your outer self. It's about accepting all of yourself." And finally, Steve Maraboli says, "How would your life be different if you stopped allowing other people to dilute or poison your day with their words or opinions? Let today be the day. You stand strong in the truth of your beauty and journey through your day without attachment to the validation of others."